This is a spooky edition of Girls Gardens. Coffins, crypts, and cadavers from around the Bay Area. Coming up on this Halloween edition, we'll talk about some of the scariest election battles this season. Then, we visit a final resting place for our furry and fishy friends. And, if you can't stand your neighbors now, imagine living next to them forever. We're bringing a new meaning to deadline today on Grass Currents.
But first, let's check in with the East Bay Express co-editor, Robert Gammon. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
So there's been a lot of drama around Berkeley's Measure T. The local union endorsed it, but then they were overruled. Explain what happened in what seems like a very odd fight.
Yes, normally public employee unions endorse measures that would raise revenues for public agencies that employ members of that union. So that's why, for example, most public employee unions in California are endorsing Proposition 30, the statewide ballot measure that would raise taxes.
To pay for schools, yeah.
And so in Berkeley, same thing. Measure T stands to raise millions of dollars in tax revenue for the city of Berkeley. And so the local members of SEIU 1021 wanted to endorse it. Yet for some reason, the county leadership overruled the local members. And the county leadership won't explain why it did that and B, why it would oppose a measure that would raise money for the city.
Well, explain to us a little more, what would Measure T actually do in West Berkeley?
Measure T would allow for dense growth on six sites that are being underused now in West Berkeley. And so, for instance, the Firefighters Union is very much in support of this measure because it would generate about $6 million in new permit fees for new building construction for the city. The firefighters are also very happy because many of the buildings that would be replaced in West Berkeley are old buildings that are fire hazards for the fire department, difficult to fight fires if there's fires in there. The new developments also would likely bring in quite a bit of sales tax revenue because there's going to be new retail stores, new businesses there, real estate transfer tax because of property sales that would go up, and property tax increases because the value of the property in those areas would go up significantly.
And so what do the people who are against Measure T say?
They're very much afraid of what would happen if there's a lot of growth in West Berkeley, that they're afraid that rent prices will go up and that existing people who are working there and living there won't be able to afford to do so anymore.
And this ties into the mayor's race as well.
It does. Mayor Tom Bates is very much in support of Measure T, and his two main opponents, Chris Worthington and Jacqueline McCormick, are both opponents of Measure T.
And also in the East Bay, you write this week in your column about a flurry of negative ads in the Oakland races.
Yes. Over the last week, Oakland residents have been bombarded with a series of attack ads from Councilman Ignacio de la Fuente, Councilwoman Jane Bruner, and the Oakland Police Officers Union. And it's all about De La Fuente and Bruner's attempts to unseat Councilwoman Rebecca Kaplan and City Attorney Barbara Parker, respectively. The ads have been, there have been numerous ads, and they do include some false and misleading statements as well.
And Oakland police seem to be in danger of a federal takeover of that department.
They are. They're facing a federal takeover. At this point, the police union has always been one of the biggest political influences in the city. And this year, they're spending a lot of money trying to elect De La Fuente and Burr.
And on this Halloween edition of Cross Currents, is there anything else, any scary ballot propositions that you want to make sure that we know about or think about?
Statewide, Prop 33, I think. It's gone under the radar. It hasn't gotten a lot of coverage like Prop 30 and 32 and 37 have. But 33 is another effort by a large auto insurer, Mercury General, to change the rules in California so that it can charge different rates to people depending upon where they live. That's right now is illegal in California, but Prop 33 would effectively change that.
That's Robert Gammon, co-editor of the East Bay Express. You can find all of their articles online at eastbayexpress.com and links to them at klw.org. Come next Tuesday, we'll see which of those scary ballot measures will live on and which will go to their graves.
What do you suppose that noise was?
Whatever it was, it's no more strange than the other things happening around this cemetery.
Spirits like old Farmer Caller talked about.
Well, maybe.
The only spirits he saw tonight were those I smelled on his breath.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Halloween gets us all looking at graves and cemeteries a little differently. In San Francisco, there aren't that many. The city banned the construction of new burial grounds at the turn of the 20th century and moved most of the existing graves to Colma not long after. But there are a few cemeteries that remain within city limits. One of the most notable isn't for people. It's for pets.
Paramount Pictures presents Stephen King's all-time best-selling tale of horror, Pet Sematary.
The 1989 Stephen King classic Pet Sematary is about a family who buries their dead cat named Church in a special burial ground. The cat comes back to life as an evil version of itself. And things get worse from there. San Francisco's pet cemetery is very similar. Well, except for the bloodthirsty zombies. Laura Flynn brings us this postcard.
Yeah, we have Randy, Daisy. Yeah, I can't read that one.
Rest in peace. Tiki. Hula Girl. Tagalong. Smokey. Bambi and Blondie. Dumbo. Coco. Puddin' Dandridge. Hollywood. They were loved, they are missed, they are pets.
There are so many markers with these very sweet names and also very very personal messages from families. And oftentimes kids will have left messages to their pets and little sayings or nicknames that they had for them. It's all very, it's very personal and very sweet.
Christina Wallace is a conservator and senior preservation specialist at the Presidio Trust. She's the one who takes care of the Presidio Pet Cemetery. Overlooking Crissy Field and the Golden Gate Bridge, it's a final resting place for more than 400 beloved pets from all over the world.
Oftentimes you'll see on their markers that they were from Germany. There's a lot from Germany and other places around the world where the Army families were stationed.
Unlike the uniform and pristine San Francisco National Cemetery up the road, the pet cemetery is a mixed mash of grave markers, haphazardly scattered, and a little overgrown. It's not consistently maintained. The Presidio relies on volunteers for that. But it is preserved.
We treat it as a cultural site because of its significance and importance to the Presidio and also to the history of the Presidio and the Army families that lived here and buried their pets here.
Local lore has it that the cemetery was originally a burial ground for 19th century cavalry or World War II guard dogs, but no one actually knows if that's true. When it opened officially in 1952, the Presidio was home to thousands of military families and soldiers. It's hard to know, but the pets might have helped people feel more at home.
They had a lot of pets. Most of the markers here are for dogs, and I think the second most common marker are for cats, but there's also, you know, birds and rabbits and fish and snakes and all kinds of things.
I love how they have these exact dates
for a fish. February 2008 till July 2009.
That's great.
Was that like a rat?
Yeah.
It looks like a R.I.P. It looks like a rat, a little white rat.
Just like a human cemetery, the pets' grave markers range in size and formality. Some are simple, made of wood with painted inscriptions. Others are more elaborate, marble with engraved images.
See, I love this. Our Dizzy Bird Dog, we loved her. I think those little statements that they put on the markers are some of my favorite things. There's one with the enameled image of Tippy, Daddy's little baby boy.
The cemetery was closed to new burials in 1963, but they still get requests, and sometimes new markers just show up.
It's fairly recent. Oh yeah, every time we come here, there's a new one. They typically tend to bury towards the back, I think, is so that it may go unnoticed. But yeah, that's from 2010.
We continue walking through the cemetery, reading the tributes on each marker. Wallace squats down and brushes a marble headstone to read the fading inscription.
It's in memory of Margaret O'Brien, a native of Ireland, died February 28, 1889, aged 52 years. I think it says, may her soul rest in peace. Perhaps it's buried underground, but I think someone clearly just put a memorial here for Margaret, who I don't imagine was a pet.
Although Margaret's memorial is peculiar, it underscores our human desire to honor life, whether it's another person or a furry friend. In San Francisco, this is Laura Flynn for Cross Currents.
How do you honor your pets? You can share memories with us on Facebook. We're KALW News.
From all I've seen tonight, guns won't do any good. Clay is dead, and we buried him. How are we going to kill somebody that's already dead? Dead! And yet there he stands.
I'm going to sneak up behind him and whop him over the head.
Oh, you think it'll work?
Know of anything else to try, follow me.
You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. The animals in the Presidio Pet Cemetery come from all over the world, and their burials reflect the lives and customs of the people who cared for them. Here in the KALW newsroom, we have a very international team with cultural burial customs of our own. Reporter Artyoms Kunahovs is from Latvia and says cemeteries there aren't always somber places. In fact, they can be quite festive.
First of all, graveyards are a big deal in Latvia. People take pride in how beautiful graveyards are there, and often take traditions around them very seriously. There is even a common term, kapu kultūra, which means graveyard culture. For instance, one is supposed to bring only even numbers of flowers to a graveyard, let's say 2 or 4 roses or tulips. That's why one should never try to bring 2 roses or any other flowers to a birthday. That would be a serious offense. One always brings an uneven number of flowers to any other place besides a graveyard. At the center of Latvian graveyard culture is the graveyard holiday, or kapu svētki in Latvian. It's such a distinct tradition that recently one of the theaters in Latvia made a whole play about it. So true. So, how do you celebrate our graveyard holiday? Of course, you go to the graveyard where your relatives are. For many people, it often means driving to the village their family comes from. In many cases, the graveyard holiday is the only time during the year when they can meet all their distant relatives. And people eat and drink right at their dead relatives' tombs. There is also usually a priest from a local church and maybe even a small band playing. For many, this is a time and place to see and be seen. New shoes, fresh haircuts, and clean shirts are prepared for the occasion. And often, in the evening, there is dancing and other festivities in the village near the graveyard. It's important to know that kapu svētki doesn't have a particular date. It happens all through the summer. So sometimes people spend several weekends driving around the country to have a drink and a piece of pie at their relatives' tombs.
That's KALW's Artyoms Kunahovs. If you want to share your culture's burial customs with us, leave us a message at 415-264-7106. That number again to leave a message is 415-264-7106. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. And now it's time for your cemetery stories from San Francisco StoryCorps. Marianne Gilmer was born in Germany during the Second World War. She says growing up in her village during those tragic years was tough on her family, especially after her father died in battle. She was aware of death at a young age, but she and her best friend still found ways to remain playful and adventurous. In this story, she tells her daughter Susan about one of her most peculiar playgrounds, the local cemetery.
We would take our doll buggies, we love dolls, you know, we had dolls in our baby stroller, a buggy. And the cemeteries in Germany are different than they are here, you know, they are, it's a culture. It's their big beds with a lot of flowers, people put beautiful flower arrangements on it.
It's almost like a garden in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, you've seen it, you know. So at that time, there was this one corner of the cemetery that was a children's cemetery. And we liked it because it had all the little graves with the little...
tiny gardens, probably.
Little crosses and tombstones. And it would always say, our little angel or something, you know, and the date of birth. And we'd be, like, very young. And it made us so sad, you know. And then some of them would have flowers and some of them wouldn't. So we felt sorry for the ones that didn't have flowers. So we would go to the big compost pile where the people took their wilted flowers, and we took the ones that had just a little bit life left in them. And we would put them on the graves of the children.
The little neglected ones?
Yeah. What would you say, the one that does all the funerals? He lived there. The grave digger, that's what he was, the grave digger, yeah. And we kind of made up stories about him and kind of scared ourselves.
Would he allow you just to play over there?
Oh, yeah, yeah, because we were no problem, you know. We were just sitting there and talking
playing
to our
cemetery.
Dolls and picking up the wilted flowers and, you know, but...
Now, wouldn't you then kind of join in on some of the funerals?
Oh, yeah, actually we did, because they had the Leichenhalle there. It was in the same place. It was a little chapel.
What's the Leichenhalle?
With the where they put the dead, bring the dead people, and also for viewing for people. Mm-hmm. So it would be just like the funerals. They would be just like a bed. They would be like laying in a bed with a sheet and their hands folded like that, maybe across. And people could come and view. So we walked right along, you know, viewing those people and crying with them. And afterwards we just, and people would go like to the grave, and then they, you know, I mean, then they did the casket thing, and then they would walk them to the grave, and they would sing the grave, and the people would be standing there crying, obviously, you know, and they'd put the little sand pile, I know, and flowers on the casket, and we would do all that, you know, and then we would follow them to the wake, because it was all open, like it was for the whole village.
Okay.
Because we did the same things for weddings. We went to all the weddings, and then afterwards we would go to the celebration, and they would, even if you were not related, they'd always give you some cake or, you know, whoever wanted to partake, and so I got fed.
That was Marianne Gilmer speaking with her daughter Susan at the StoryCorps booth in the Contemporary Jewish Museum of San Francisco. If you want to know more about StoryCorps, go to kalw.org.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer.
You're listening to the Halloween edition of Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Not all of the dead spend the rest of eternity underground, as we'll learn in this next edition of Meet Your Neighbors, Your Eternal Neighbors.
I like my neighbors.
Finding a place to call your own in San Francisco is pretty challenging these days, especially if you're looking for somewhere affordable, comfortable, quiet, and permanent. So, when KALW's Stephen Short heard about a mixer for potential buyers of small units, he thought it was worth a look.
30 or so guests are already chatting and enjoying the wine and cheese when I arrive at this soaring domed building, not far from the Lone Mountain campus of the University of San Francisco. I soon discover that I'm in the main building, the old building. It's the new annex on the property that people have come to see. And that's where I meet Bernal Heights residents Charles Beerworth and John Daniel. They're pointing out their recently purchased unit.
That's what attracted me, was the light that flooded the room.
Yeah.
You know, the light floods the room, beautiful skylight, stainless.
And do you have one of the big ones? Is that, it's like one of these?
It's right there, where it says reserved.
We couldn't afford the big one.
Oh, this one. Okay, good.
Beerworth brought a portfolio of his paintings today, especially landscapes with soft earth tones.
I thought I'd share them with some of the people, my future neighbors, you know, thinking that maybe they might be interested in having a little mini mural painted on the wall of their niche.
Yes, he did say niche. Not house or apartment, but niche. This Meet Your Neighbors mixer is taking place at San Francisco's Columbarium, one of the few remaining places where people can store their cremated remains within the city limits. These people will be neighbors for all eternity.
You know, I don't know of anybody else who is doing this type of event.
That's Matt Outcault.
I am the manager of community and family service for the Neptune Society and San Francisco Columbarium.
The Columbarium has these mixers about once a year.
You know, people seem to have a really whimsical approach to it, you know. Oh, that's the most fantastic idea. I've always wondered who was going to be next to me kind of thing. So, I mean, it's been really great.
We enjoy these get-togethers because they're kind of humorous on the light side, and I think that as much humor as you can have about death is a good thing.
Sharon Jean Leeds is a dance professor at USF. She lives nearby with her husband, Richard, a dentist. They first came to the Columbarium for a friend's service.
And I was just taken with the history of the facility, the beauty of it, and the variety of people, the fact that it's non-denominational, and everybody is here, starting from back in the late 1800s.
About 8,500 of the dearly departed reside in the original building. This new addition can accommodate 1,300 more, with plans for yet more niches. That's the proper term, by the way, niche or niche, but many people refer to them as condos or apartments, and decorate them accordingly.
And that's another thing that we really liked about this place, is just being able to, just walking around and looking at other people's niches, especially the newer ones, because many of the older ones have copper covers over them. You can't see into them. But at some point, people started furnishing them with pictures and mementos, and it really gives you a feeling of who this person was.
The Leeds are trying out some decorations of their own, sort of as placeholders.
There's a pair of ballet shoes, there's a dental instrument, and an old camera that used to be my father-in-law's, because people know me for that also.
Some displays are serious. Many are whimsical. They give a feeling for who the occupants were, and also who they still are.
Dear, what are we settling on, a color scheme or something at this point?
Taxi driver Wade Grubb is here with his partner Vicky Walker, a local historian.
We have to decide what knickknacks we're going to put in there, and maybe a coming soon sign or coming not so soon. But we want people to know what we're like before we move in permanently. We need to have a moving in party.
Well, I was going to say, they usually do have a moving in party, but you're usually not, don't have much to say about it.
Perhaps the key to being a good neighbor in the afterlife is to practice being a good neighbor in the here and now. Richard and Sharon Jean Leeds understand this.
How do you get along with your current neighbors now?
Great.
Yeah, we get along really, really well. We have each other's keys, in fact.
Okay, so you'll be good neighbors, and you are good neighbors, and you will be good neighbors.
Perpetuity.
Right.
The Columbarium's Matt Outcault is not aware of anyone asking to move after meeting people at these events, either to be closer or farther away.
Not yet. We haven't run into that yet, but, you know, there's a first time for everything, so.
As the party nears its end, people start filing out, respectfully, to return to their other, more temporary dwellings. But thanks to the Columbarium, they will never really have to leave their beloved city by the bay. In San Francisco, I'm Stephen Short for Cross Currents.
You can find all of the segments of Meet Your Neighbors at our website. It's kalw.org. That's also where you can tell us about your neighbors or any story that we should be covering. Just call and leave us a message at 415-264-7106. Again, that number to leave us a message is 415-264-7106.
I wonder if that's the last we'll see of them.
Perhaps. But sooner or later, there'll be others.
You've been listening to a special Halloween edition of Cross Currents from KLW News. Today's team includes Isabel Angel, Julie Kane, Audrey Dilling, Chris Hoff, Laura Flynn, Alyssa Kapnick, RTM's Kuna Hoffs, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Erica Mu, Lisa Ratner, Judy Silber, Raisu Sussman, and Stephen Short. Today's show was engineered by Seth Samuel. And a special thanks to our general manager, Matt Martin, who we're all dressed up as today. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan. Happy Halloween!